Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. In each legislative session, Wisconsin lawmakers review hundreds of proposals, each of which, if passed, could have significant impacts on residents throughout central and northern Wisconsin. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. The Wisconsin State Legislature runs a robust website, but it can be challenging to sift through all the information available online. The focus of the most recent session has focused largely on the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on businesses and individuals in our region. Joining us today are two central Wisconsin lawmakers, Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point, who represents the 71st Assembly District. Katrina, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also joining us today is Republican State Representative Pat Snyder of Schofield, who represents the 85th Assembly District. Welcome back, Pat.
Hey, thanks, Shereen.
You can join the conversation, too. Email your questions to route51@wpr.org. Be sure to include your first name and your community of residence, or call us at 800-780-9742. So since our last discussion in February, a lot has happened, obviously. It is hard to know even where to start. Obviously, COVID-19 changed everything, not just for residents, not just for businesses, but really from a legislative standpoint as well. Pat, let's start with you. When this pandemic hit, how did that change your priorities? Like how did you change what you decided to take on?
Well, I think once the stay-at-home order was put in, and even nationally it was shut down, I think my concern was, you know, making sure that people were safe, making sure hospitals had the amount of PPE they needed, checking in with a lot of hospital officials, also businesses, and making sure that they could get through and get the grants they might need. And starting, you know, really in later April and continuing through now, also helping the individuals that are applying for unemployment. So it shifted more for helping individuals, businesses, and hospitals, at least on my front, Shereen.
Katrina, I have to wonder, because of all this, were there bills that were high on your priority list that you had to hold off on?
Sure. So, you know, the last time we talked, we were heading into the last week that the assembly would be in session in February. And since then, from March onward, things have changed pretty drastically for the legislature. And first and foremost, I want to say, you know, to all those who are facing hardships and struggling, I truly, you know, my heart goes out to you, and I have so much sympathy. And what my office and I have been trying to do over the last 2 months is connect people with resources based on their situation and circumstances. So when we had our first stay-at-home order or safer-at-home order, one of the biggest questions that people had was, who does it apply to? So we spent a lot of time helping people understand the definition of essential, and whether or not they could be open, and then speaking with workers about workplace safety. And really by April, a lot of the time into May has been spent connecting people with unemployment resources, helping businesses apply for the many different grant and loan programs out there, and taking phone calls from people with questions related to the state's programs and suggestions and ideas for how we can improve them. And so in April, we had an extraordinary session day to take up many different initiatives in the state's COVID-19 response legislation, which we passed. So I'd be happy to talk about that as well.
Sure. First, let's talk about what the bill did. You know, just a few things that you're really happy about that did pass in this bill. Katrina, can you speak to that?
Sure. So one of the greatest things that I was happy to do was, the state still had the 1 week waiting period for unemployment insurance, and we waived that 1 week waiting period. And in addition, anyone who had to wait that week was given back pay if it happened during the public health emergency as of March 12th. We also set aside $75 million from our state's budget to address the public health emergency. We accepted $580 million in federal funds for our state's Badger Care program, Those are a higher reimbursement rate. We eliminated the copays and coinsurance for COVID-19 testing. We also prohibited any insurance provider from discriminating against a person based on any current, past, or suspected COVID-19 diagnosis. We also wanted to make sure that in terms of out-of-network care, if someone's seeking out-of-network care for COVID-19, they wouldn't pay more for a service that's already in their plan's network during that health emergency. And one of the big ones that I heard from my local government about was they needed the ability to delay the property tax payments. And so we allowed local governments to move that deadline and allow for late installment payments without penalties and interest charge. And my local government immediately acted on that. So really the goal was to protect folks who would otherwise kind of fall through the cracks when it came to insurance coverage of COVID-19. It was to accept federal funds and then to waive that one-week waiting period for unemployment insurance.
You know, you were just talking about unemployment insurance, and I just read a report this morning that said the average wait time for unemployment now in Wisconsin still sits at 17 days. Pat, what do you think that can be done to improve that, to make sure that money gets in the hands of unemployed people more quickly?
Well, I will say I applaud the efforts made here recently. They have extended their hours of taking calls to 5 o'clock. And if anyone is in the queue at 5, they will answer all those calls in the queue before they close. But that is a concern of mine because right now I have 35 cases here in the 85th Assembly District that we had worked on. Only 6 have been resolved. 26 are still under review. I've had people that have been waiting for anywhere from 6 to 9 weeks. One gentleman has been waiting 9 weeks. And it was like something like 2 weeks before they even called him back. So I guess I would just say that whatever resources they might need, or even if they get the application, to at least call them and say, hey, we got it, we're working on it, so they know that, you know, that they're actually seeing some kind of progress, because a lot of people just haven't heard anything. So our office does advocate for them and investigate. So anyone listening here in the 85th, please call my office if you're having trouble, and we will help you get through to that and get it done. But I'm glad some of the efforts are being made, but I think more can be done to reach these people, and that wait period shouldn't be so long, because these folks are going without for a long time.
And I have to wonder, too, where does the state stand when it comes to the ability to pay those unemployment benefits? Katrina, will funding run out? Would that ever happen? And if it did, what would happen then?
So that's an important question. And the way that the funding is paid depends on what program you are eligible for. So if it's PUA, which is the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, that's the new program for folks who traditionally under the current Wisconsin unemployment program wouldn't qualify. So folks who were furloughed, who lost some hours but not all, who are self-employed, that's a new program funded by the federal government. And our current Wisconsin unemployment insurance account or trust fund, I should say, would potentially by October run out of funds if things were to go according to the last few weeks. That is obviously subject to change, and lawmakers are looking at that with great interest and concern. But it is important to recognize that we've received a significant amount of federal dollars for our state's unemployment program, including the new PUA. So some of it is federally funded, and I think it's something we'll be looking at closely. But to address the other issues, I've been speaking with the Department of Workforce Development Secretary multiple times per month personally, as I'm also very concerned and have been advocating for dozens of constituents who've been waiting. And one of my requests was, in addition to adding on to the hours, which they've done, is to prioritize claims that are older, so folks who've been waiting since March. The reason why there are some people who have been waiting longer is those claims are typically in adjudication, and it does take longer to adjudicate a claim. That means that there are typically multiple circumstances under which the claim has to be investigated. And that does take longer, unfortunately. But it is important to recognize that DWD has taken significant steps forward. They've hired several call center vendors to answer calls, one of which will start on June 1st related to just the PUA application, that new program I mentioned. And they have another call center answering unemployment benefit calls. And in addition to that, they've hired more than, or they're recruiting to hire more than 315 people, and they've shifted around other DWD employees to help with unemployment. So I do think a key part of this is knowing that the state recognizes they're receiving millions of calls per week, and they're doing their very best to respond accordingly by hiring more people and building capacity. But what's been so frustrating for people on the other end of the phone trying to get their answers is they can't get through. So there is new information out there regarding the call center. If your last name begins with the letter A to M, on Monday and Friday, please call Monday through Friday. You should call between 7:35 a.m. and 11:30. And then if your last name begins with letter N to Z, you'd want to call between Monday and Friday between 11:30 and 3:30. So that's something to note. I think that's a way they're trying to manage the workflow. But in addition, I have requested to please prioritize those oldest claims because there are so many people struggling right now.
Pat, when I first asked you about priorities, you talked about hospitals. And I have to wonder, with so many elective procedures canceled in the face of the pandemic, the region's rural hospitals are starting to face a true financial crisis. This is what we're hearing. Does the state legislature have any plans to support those rural hospitals? What's in the works?
Well, I know that the governor did get $1.9 billion of federal money that he might be able to help with some of the hospitals. But I know Aspirus, back when I talked with the CEO there, they were losing in their whole hospital system. This was back in early April, about $1 million a day. So that is very critical. I don't think we've started to have discussions yet if the state has the money to help them. I know that they're hoping so. We can look at that, but I like to at least hopefully see if the federal money can come in and help them first.
Let's talk about farmers, too. They are struggling. They have been struggling for some time now. This week, of course, we did learn that Governor Tony Evers will use $50 million of federal relief funding for direct payments to farmers. They can apply for that aid through the Department of Revenue. They could receive payments as early as June. Is there any other help that could be on the way for struggling farmers, Katrina?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that $50 million. It's important to recognize that last month, just about every single agricultural group in the state did ask the state legislature and governor for $50 million. So for the governor to deliver on that $50 million this week is incredibly helpful to our farmers who've been struggling for a long time. In addition, I think it's very notable that for the first time as of May 4th, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program through the SBA is available to farmers. In the past, that was never available to agricultural businesses. And I do know a farmer locally who applied and almost immediately got the funds. I was really happy to hear about that. So I would recommend applying for that Economic Injury Disaster Loan. That's kind of like bridge funding for folks. And then if there are agricultural producers who aren't eligible for regular Farm Service Agency loans, they could apply under the USDA Business and Industry CARES Act program. And then there's also a USDA Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. They're going to be providing up to $16 billion in direct payments to U.S. farmers and ranchers impacted by COVID-19. And that application opens on May 26th. As far as I know regarding this new USDA program, I haven't seen any federal guidance regarding how that will be distributed. And so I did sign a letter with over 100 other legislators in 34 states asking the USDA to really prioritize giving those funds to folks who are struggling, including small family farmers. I want to make sure that people locally get an opportunity to have equal access to those dollars. And so I'm hoping that USDA is very careful about how they apportion the funds and that they're fair and equitable in delivering for our farmers. Because as we all know, with global markets, commodity pricing, And then on top of that, the trade war, they've really had a very difficult time lately, and we need to do everything possible to support them.
And, you know, turning to elections, I was just thinking about the upcoming elections. It's not that far away. I know there were some issues with absentee ballots from the April 7th election that didn't reach their destination. So what are legislators doing to prevent that from happening again in the upcoming August and presidential election, Pat?
Well, there was concern with the number of ballots, and I think the not only the Elections Commission but also the Postal Service are examining what possibly went wrong with people not getting their ballots first in the mail. They asked for them and they never got them, so that needs to be rectified. As far as upcoming elections, I know that there is a talk of having a application sent out to everyone who's an eligible voter to apply for an absentee ballot, and it would give them that option. But it is concerning that there were some glitches. I know that when I worked a polling place in April down in Galloway, the postman was bringing the ballots to them, and I know they were thinking they were doing a good thing, but they didn't have the postmark. They just brought them, you know, they were sent in and got to their post office. Instead of going to Green Bay to get a postmark, they just brought them in to the town hall for tabulation, but they needed the postmark. So that's why some of those were not accepted. So I think it was a learning experience, and I hope those type of things will be corrected here in the future.
Sure. We'll talk a little bit more about elections shortly, but we do need to take a break. Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point and Republican State Representative Pat Snyder of Schofield are our guests today on Route 51 as we continue our local legislative roundup. Your questions are welcome, too. Email us at route51@wpr.org. Be sure to include your first name, your city of residence. You can join the conversation by phone, too. Call us at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Republican State Representative Pat Snyder of Schofield and Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point are here today as we discuss recent and upcoming legislation being proposed in Madison. Your questions are welcome. Email us at route51@wpr.org. Be sure to include your first name and your city of residence. You can also call us 800-780-9742. Getting back to the election question, Katrina, what are your thoughts on this? If the number of infections and deaths in Wisconsin continue to rise, how do you see us safely conducting future elections, including the one in August and in November?
Absolutely. So the safety and health of everyone should be our top priority, and I think we need to expand vote-by-mail efforts. Other states have done it successfully, and if it's good enough for the president, it should be good enough for everyone. So I do think it's important to note that the Wisconsin Election Commission met this week to discuss suspending every registered voter in the state an absentee ballot registration or request form, and they delayed the vote on it as they were split 3-3 as to how many people to send it to. So I think next week they'll be taking a closer look at who should receive it. I think there is a question as to whether or not folks who are not registered voters should get one, or folks who are living in cities that are already sending the absentee ballot registration form, as they should get one. And then there's also a question as to whether or not it should be managed by clerks instead of the Elections Commission. My position is I think it's the safest way to vote in this climate during a global pandemic. And in addition to not jeopardizing our own health, I think we want to protect our clerks and our poll workers who are volunteering all day, and the fewer people who are in that room with them, the better. So looking at the April 7th election, there were clear problems that need to be improved on, and that should serve as a roadmap for what we as a legislature should be asking for, as well as what the Wisconsin Elections Commission should do. So I wrote a letter to the Elections Commission with some of my colleagues, as well as a letter to the Inspector General of the United States Postal Service, asking them to look into the many absentee ballots that were never delivered to folks who requested them on time. So I know of many folks who either went in person to vote on Election Day, jeopardizing their health, or who just didn't vote because they requested an absentee ballot and never received one. And then there was also the issue of the postmarks either being illegible or having no date on them, which could have led to hundreds, if not thousands, of people having their ballots tossed out through no fault of their own. And then there's also several reports of communities like Fox Point, Appleton, and Oshkosh, in which hundreds of voters requested absentee ballots, never received one. And later on, there was found at a USPS facility in Milwaukee hundreds of ballots. So that's why I did ask the United States Postal Service Inspector General to look into this as well. We want to make sure this never happens again, and we also want to protect and safeguard both the public health and our democracy. So I think a vote-by-mail expansion, simply enfranchising people by giving them that absentee ballot registration form, is a good first step. But I also think the state should look further at sending people absentee ballots as well.
All right, we have a caller, John from Galloway. John has a question about elections. Welcome, John.
Yeah, thank you. My question is for Representative Snyder. With the court actions taken by the Wisconsin GOP, will Republican representatives and senators be willing to take responsibility for the results of, for example, overturning Governor Evers' stay-at-home order, both from a health perspective and from an economic perspective, with the uncertainty that opening the state has caused and not allowing businesses to operate at full, because there's a whole bunch of people who don't come out to the businesses because of the uncertainty on what guidelines businesses are taking, what actions they're taking to protect customers and themselves. Will Wisconsin GOP members be willing to take responsibility for the economic and health impact of the lawsuits taken by the Wisconsin GOP?
Pat, well, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, thanks, John. It's always good to hear from you. I would say that the recommendations and the ways to reopen business has been put forward by the WEDC as well as the Marathon County Health Department. I know that many of the businesses here in the Wausau region and the 85th District are following those guidelines. Some are waiting to open until the 26th. And for the customers, they need to go to the website, if there is one, or call them and ask what type of precautions they are taking or how they are going to make their environment safe. You know, you've got to put some of the responsibility on individuals to be able to go forward with this. But as far as the economics, I want to get the economics going again. We've got huge deficits. We've lost over $480 million in April alone. So we have to get businesses going again, and the recommendations are there, and it's up to the people to call ahead if they want to patronize those businesses to see what they've done and put in place for that. And as far as responsibility, my responsibility is to make sure people are safe, but also to make sure that we can get this economy growing again and make sure that we have some funding so that when later this year and then the next biennium, we can have funding for K through 12, for Badger Care, for roads and things like that. So that's what I'm looking forward to. But if you want to throw the gauntlet on the GOP, then so be it. But I think it's for the best interest of everyone that we move forward.
You know, we're hearing about deficits at state universities. You know, we're talking about losses there in the hundreds of millions of dollars statewide, along with other public school deficits. State lawmakers, I know, have asked Congress for additional resources for our education system. Katrina, where does this effort stand now?
Absolutely. So I think it's extremely important for folks to recognize that our public schools and higher ed educational institutions are going to be struggling without additional aid. And that's why I led an effort to write a letter to our congressional delegation asking them for funds to support our UW system and our technical colleges. I also signed on to a letter for K-12 funding requests as well. When Congress passed the CARES Act, they did provide funds for example, our UW system, where across all institutions, including technical colleges, private schools, and UW campuses, there was a total of $186 million. $47 million went to the different campuses across UW's system, and now there's an existing $123 million shortfall. And why is that important? It's possible that without further action down the road, campuses could close. And I know that people in Wausau and Marshfield and Stevens Point are, you know, very protective of their local campus, and they recognize it not only contributes to workforce development and that the economic return for every dollar we put in is $23 back to the community, but it also is a huge part of the vibrancy of the community, both in terms of recruitment and retention of workers and just the added culture. So I'm extremely concerned about our schools and our campuses across the state, and we really need our federal government to continue to act, because the state levels are looking at our, you know, next budget. It does appear that there may be a budget repair bill, and, you know, no one's saying that things will be going back to normal in the next few months, but we sure would like to get things as close to it as possible in terms of funding, and Congress can help with that. So we're hoping, as they're debating their fourth COVID-19 relief bill in the House and Senate, that they think of us on the state level. And I know they're also considering funding for state and local governments as well. And that would really help us as we look at the budget shortfall going into the next biennium.
Let's talk a little bit about childcare too. Closed schools and gyms, they're really exacerbating the child care shortage. And this is a subject we've talked about on this program before. I mean, even before the pandemic, this was a child care desert, really, in this area. So now parents are facing this even greater struggle when it comes to finding quality care. I know both of you are invested in this issue. Pat, what solutions are you seeing now? What's happening on this front?
Well, during the emergency order, Secretary Amundson and the Department of Children and Families put waivers out that allowed some licensed child care facilities to be able to accept, you know, more kids than maybe the number required. And what was positive about it is that we didn't hear any reports of anything negative, at least up to this point. And I know that the emergency order is gone and they're saying we're going back to normal. I would like to see, now that there's no summer school and we are still in the air for the fall, if somehow we could, you know, keep what they had done with the waiver going through the summer, because I've had several mothers call me saying that, you know, they can't find a place for their kids from the licensed child care because the numbers are going back and they don't know what they're going to have to do. Do they give up their job? And so it is a situation that I think we need to look at. And I'm, in fact, going to be talking with Secretary Amundson this afternoon about some ways that we might be able to at least help in this area and be able to allow families to determine where they can go and make sure the kids are in a safe environment, but a learning environment as well, because, you know, they're facing hardships possibly with the money situations and the downturn. And now to have this situation where they can't find a place. Some places are opening, some places haven't said they were going to open again. So the shortage that was there before the pandemic has now been like elevated twofold because of the pandemic. So that's a situation that we need to continue to work on, even once we get through this, to be able to find more, especially in the north, licensed in-home care, and maybe look at some of the regulations to allow more opportunities for families to use those locations.
You know, Katrina, you were one of several legislators to introduce a proposal to invest $100 million in state broadband expansion and improve mapping accuracy. I feel like the pandemic has kind of pulled back the curtain on how much we rely on broadband and the lack of broadband in some areas. So is this still one of your priorities? Where does this proposal stand now?
Sure. Well, so any bill that we introduce this session is no longer able to essentially be resurrected unless we get it scheduled for an extraordinary session, since our regular legislative session is over. It's absolutely a priority of mine. I don't know that the same amount of funds would be available at this point, given that our state budget projections have dramatically been altered. But I am a huge proponent of expanding access to rural broadband, especially. Broadband is essentially a utility at this point. Everybody needs it. You see, our students need it for virtual learning. Many people are using telehealth to access medicine right now, and it's a good low-risk way to, get access to care without having to go into a hospital, especially if it's a long drive for you or if you're already sick and just need a check-in. So in addition to that, many people are teleworking and they're operating their businesses from home. So it's very clear that the state could do more for broadband. And I will note that this budget specifically had the highest amount of broadband funds for expansion, but we still need to look at underserved communities. It's so expensive for folks who live in that last mile of connection to get access to the broadband unless there are state or federal grants available. So that is a priority. And just if I could quick to go back to the child care initiative and the shortages, this week the governor did announce and I should say that the Joint Finance Committee approved funds for essential workforce families to support the cost of providing that child care for essential workforce families, including paying staff and reimbursing families for costs, as well as supporting incentive pay and hazard pay for child care providers and support for both temporarily closed child care programs and programs that have been operating. And this is $51.6 million. So there are absolutely things we need to continue doing for child care providers and families, but I'm happy with this good step forward.
Okay. All right. Speaking of child care, related to child care, foster care. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that May is Foster Care Month. I know, Pat, that foster care is a passion topic for you. What is happening from a legislative standpoint there?
Well, we're still, we worked on it the last session with a lot of the foster care bills. But the one thing when I talked with Secretary Amundson is that, with the pandemic, some of the foster care parents were reluctant to taking new kids in because of this. And also they saw a drop in the number of people wanting to become foster parents. So I would urge folks, if they really can feel this way, to open up their hearts and homes to some of these individuals, these young kids who are having trauma in their life and being removed from the home. It is so necessary to be able to find that stable environment to help them move forward, either through reunification or other measures down the road. And I know we kind of get a little bit of a black eye with what happened in Rhinelander with that teacher. Again, that's only, presumption. But, I noticed some of the comments on Facebook saying the foster care system is screwed up and all that. Well, it's an individual. And, we want to be able to make sure that we vet these folks really well and don't let that one incident deter you on helping these kids in the future.
Republican State Representative Pat Snyder of Schofield and Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point are our guests today on Route 51 as we continue our legislative roundup discussing state legislation that impacts residents in our region. Your questions are welcome. Email us at route51@wpr.org. Be sure to include your first name and city of residence. You can also join the conversation by calling us 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point and Republican State Representative Pat Snyder of Schofield are guests today on Route 51 as we continue our local legislative roundup. I'm Shereen Seward. Join us by emailing your questions to route51@wpr.org. Or you can call us at 800-780-9742. During the last Route 51 legislative roundup, we talked about the Hmong deportation issue. This is when members of the Hmong community spoke out strongly amid reports that the Trump administration was seeking the ability to deport thousands of Hmong residents to Laos. Katrina, you circulated a letter to the legislature to send to Congress related to that effort. Where does this stand right now?
Sure. So since then, we also, some of my colleagues and I also introduced a joint resolution, Assembly Joint Resolution 154, to oppose efforts by the State Department and Trump administration to allow for the deportation of Hmong and Lao U.S. residents to the Lao People's Democratic Republic. And since then, some of our members of Congress in Wisconsin, along with others across the nation, introduced the Hmong and Lao Refugee Deportation Prohibition Act, which would be, it would help protect at least 4,700 folks from deportation who are of Hmong and Lao descent. And that bill would halt those deportations for 72 months while individual immigration cases are reassessed. We learned that, you know, of the 4,700 people who would be subject to deportation and sent to Laos, at least 300 or so are from Wisconsin, and I know of several dozen in central Wisconsin who have come forward to say that it was them. And what's concerning about this is the Laotian government has a long and dark history of mistreating the Hmong people. And when you're forced to go to a country where your family isn't there, you can't speak the Laotian language, you can't integrate into a society in which you're literally not welcome because your parents were never welcome in the first place, that is a tragedy. And so I held a roundtable in Wausau with Hmong leaders from Stevens Point in Wausau a few months back to hear more about how people are responding and if those with final deportation orders were being deported. And at this time, I think some people have, there are a few in Wisconsin who voluntarily left to Laos. And I don't have more of an update than that because there's been no signed repatriation agreement yet. The Trump administration is still in talks. And I think that's why the Hmong community raised and rang the alarm bell immediately to alert lawmakers and policymakers to this. And I think this is a moral issue first and foremost, you know, to send people back to a country with human rights abuses against the Hmong people seems not only misguided, but cruel and harmful. And so that's why I spoke out right away, and we'll continue to monitor all of this very closely.
Pat, you were key in creating an official Hmong Lao Veterans Day bill. Can you talk about that a little bit? What prompted you to do that, and what is the status of that bill?
Thanks a lot, Marie. Yeah, the Senator Petrovsky and I came together and were able to work with the Hmong leaders here and the Hmong veterans on making a day that commemorates their actions and help and aid through the war in Vietnam. And we wanted to specify a day that would be remembered, and hopefully the schools would be able to talk about that day and talk about what the Hmong have done for us in the war and the sacrifices they made. And basically, they, in doing that, gave up their right to stay in their homeland for their own safety and came to America. So we put together a bill that would designate May 14th as Hmong Veterans Day, and we would commemorate it at the Capitol. We were all set. The governor has already signed the bill, so it is official, and we were going to have a big celebration with the governor in Madison on the 14th of May, but with the COVID, we decided against it. So next year, we'll have a really big celebration in the effort, and it's so good to be able to commemorate that and remember them. And again, for our schools, hopefully on that day, to discuss the sacrifices and things that they have done to help our country.
Thank you. I know that we've heard multiple reports of violence against Asian residents. Just last week in Stevens Point, a man was arrested after he allegedly harassed Asian patrons at a grocery store. That prompted a hate crime charge. Katrina, what do you suggest can be done to address this?
I think one of the most troubling things I've heard from folks is that it's just a result of this pandemic. And this is systemic racism that's long preceded this pandemic. I think the pandemic has exacerbated it as people blame and scapegoat. But unfortunately, this isn't new. And while I'm glad that the person who did commit the hate crime in Stevens Point was held to account, I'm also really sad to know this isn't the first time it's happened. And it unfortunately might not be the last time, frankly. And I think it's something that we all need to grapple with, look in the eye and say, we won't accept it, we won't tolerate it. And we personally have to play a role in stamping it out. It isn't enough to just say that you're not racist. You actually need to be anti-racist and work closely with the folks in the communities most affected to stand up when you see something and to be a voice for anti-racism. So I don't think there's any excuse for the anti-Asian violence and the language that we've seen. But I also think we all need to play our part and do what we can. And if you see something in person, you need to speak up, you need to say something, and you need to do whatever you can to make sure that no violence or hate is inflicted on our neighbors and community members.
I would really like to talk about people struggling with rent and mortgages. I know this week the governor announced a $25 million rental assistance program. That's part of the CARES Act. That would give payments directly to landlords when renters are falling behind due to COVID-related issues. What about homeowners, though? I know there are protections in place for homeowners with federally backed mortgages, but I just read a USA Today report today, actually, that said that mortgage delinquencies surged in April, the biggest jump ever. So what about homeowners who don't fall into that category with those federally backed mortgages? What do you think can be done about that, Pat? Is there anything that you're hearing on the horizon?
Well, when I've talked to some of the banking officials, mm-hmm. I think that at least the ones that that I talked with here in the Wausau area are willing to work with their homeowners where they have the loan through to, you know, if they have to miss a month or two to be able to do that. I don't think they want to foreclose on somebody during this pandemic. And I would, you know, if they don't have the backing of the federal government with some aid, I would ask them to work with their bank and to see if they can somehow get some delay in payment until they get back their jobs and get back to full salary and start making that up, even if it's in a prorated way to kind of catch up and things of that nature. So hopefully what I'm hoping for is that the banks can work with the homeowners in a respective way that they just don't suddenly say, well, sorry, pandemic or not, your house is foreclosed. Because at least the bankers I talk with don't want to see that happen at all. So I would hope that would happen, but I haven't heard of anything else on the horizon.
So nothing legislatively. I know that some of the banks in Wausau, at least, are doing that voluntarily. Other banks are not. But you don't see anything from a legislative standpoint that might address that at this point, Pat?
I haven't seen or heard anything. I don't know if Katrina has yet.
Katrina, what about you?
Yeah, I think you're right about the new rental assistance program, which will help many people. And then federally, if you have a federally backed mortgage, first and foremost, no one can foreclose on you for 60 days after March 18th. So it looks like, you know, that was the last 2 months, that's over. But secondly, if you do experience financial hardship due to COVID-19, you do have the right to request a forbearance for up to 180 days. And then you could also, as you do have the right to request an extension for another 180 days. You have to contact your loan servicer, and there will be no additional fees, penalties, or interest beyond the scheduled amounts. And then if you do not have a federally backed mortgage, that's when you need to contact your servicer and do your best to have your account number handy and go through it. But I do recognize, you know, for folks who might fall through the cracks, that's a difficult situation. I would encourage everyone to call 211 if they're in that position, since there are emergency grants available through different local programs. So, for example, in Stevens Point, there's a CAP Services COVID-19 Relief Fund for people who do fall through those. You know, if a program, if you can't meet that eligibility, whether it's for food assistance or electricity or your home, there are programs available locally. So I would encourage people to call 211, but this is something the legislature should monitor as well.
Katrina, I also wanted to ask you about the Water Quality Task Force. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, so I was very pleased that all 10 bipartisan bills we introduced earlier this year passed the State Assembly unanimously in the middle of February. And the State Senate was scheduled to go in at the end of March to hopefully take up those bills, as well as, I think, 160 total bills that the Assembly passed, which the Senate has not yet passed. As we all know, March 24th or so, that's when they were scheduled to come in, was around the time that the Safer at Home order was initiated, and as a result, they did not go in, and they acted once virtually on our COVID-19 legislation. But they still have about 160 bills that the Assembly passed that the Senate didn't. And not to speak for Representative Snyder, but I think we agree on this. The Assembly does a good job of working together and getting things done and acting quickly on bills. And I think we're kind of impatient to see the Senate come in and pass many of those bills that we spent so much time on, including those 10 clean water bills. If anyone asks, you know, well, that's $10 million, where are you going to get the money? I do want to point out that we had that money set aside as early as July last year through the budget. The budget committee did say that was part of our water quality budget. So I do think that clean water is not just a right, but it's incredibly important for our health as well. And so we need to pass those bills and continue building on that work. And I'm hopeful that the Senate will act soon to take them up.
So I'd like to ask you each one last question right before we wrap up here. There were some things, of course, that did not make it into the state's COVID bill in April. Each of you, what things would you have liked to see get through that did not pass? Pat, what are a couple of things you would have liked to see?
Well, let's see. I think most of the priorities that we wanted to get through got through. I can't think offhand anything else that I guess what I, the one thing I wish, and the governor will have to decide on this, but I was wanting to somehow freeze certain the K through 12 second year budget increases, to freeze them at the first year level until we can see what the budget looks like this fall, because I the last thing I want to do is see all the increases go in and then suddenly have to come back and say, oh, we're going to take this away. So that was the one thing that I wish we could have put in the bill and been able to take a look at down the road. But otherwise, I think most of the important stuff was in.
Katrina, were there things that you would have liked to see go through that did not?
Absolutely. So I helped develop an amendment to the COVID-19 relief bill, and it included multiple issues that are really important to me. Small business grants. This was prior to the governor announcing the new We're All In small business grants of $75 million. I had been asking for months, based on feedback from constituents, that we have a state grant program instead of just loans for small businesses. So I did introduce that, as well as investing in child care, which we already talked about, preventing insurance companies from refusing to cover diagnostics and treatment for COVID-19. So we did that for testing, but not for diagnostics and treatment. And then support for UW campuses and students, which I've already mentioned. And then funding vote by mail for every registered voter in Wisconsin, so we never have to see, you know, what happened on April 7th in the same way. We want to protect the public health. So that amendment failed on a party line vote, but these are issues I'm committed to and that I'm still working on. And I was happy that we were able to pass the COVID-19 response legislation quickly and in a bipartisan way. But I do think that we should come back and continue to act, because as we hear more from constituents who are struggling and facing many challenges at once, it's very important that we marshal state and federal resources to them and respond to their needs. So I encourage constituents to reach out, let us know what's going on, let us know how you think we can help, and please use our offices as resources as you navigate these very challenging times.
Well, I want to thank you both for this discussion today. It's been great to hear about all the things that are happening in Madison and the ways that they're going to affect all of us. That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point and Republican State Representative Pat Snyder of Schofield. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer, who is also our on-air producer today. Our producer is Joy Ratchkramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme, and you can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, join us for a discussion on local efforts to reopen the economy in north central Wisconsin. Until then, we're heading out of town.